Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Right now, though, 1955, three missionaries, an Australian, an American, and a New Zealander, all trekked into the remote jungles of West Papua to pioneer missionary work amongst the Dani tribes people there. They faced real danger from both the remote jungle and also the Dani warriors, yet they survived to see a mass conversion to Christianity as a result. Now, 50 years later, a group of their children and grandchildren have returned to the jungle to retrace their parents' footsteps and try to understand the legacy that was left behind. Jim Dawson was on that trip. He's the son of the Australian missionary I was talking about, Fred Dawson, and he's with us now on Open House. It's good to have you on Open House, Jim.
Hi, Sheridan. It's good to talk with you again.
Absolutely. What was the catalyst for this trip after so many years to get back to West Papua?
Well, it was kind of a... I started by accident, I suppose, but Doug Fitch from our church was advertising the Kokoda Trail, and he was leading a team, and he asked my brother and I if we're interested, and we said, yeah. But then independently of each other, we'd said to him, you know, we're kind of more interested in doing this trek that our dad did 50 years ago on the other side. And that's kind of how it started. And then it just snowballed from there to having 10 folk from four different countries and just an awesome trip.
Yes. You left West Papua yourself in 1959, which is quite a long time ago. How much do you remember from your childhood being there?
Well, I remember riding a little red scooter around the stony path of a thatched roof house and bamboo walls that we lived in. And interesting enough that the garden paths were still there, that the house was taken down and they'd put in a wooden house instead. Probably the most startling thing I can remember was, I guess I was only 3 and a half when I left, but they played this game where they fire arrows at a foot that they put on a stump and see who gets closest to the foot. Mm-hmm. And they grabbed me and put my foot on the stump. And I screamed blue murder and cried and raced inside. So it's just a few incidents. And they killed themselves laughing. They thought it was the biggest joke out.
I bet they did.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't really remember too much. Just a few things that sort of burnt into my psyche there somehow.
Yes. What were you expecting before this trip, before you left? What were you expecting when you got there?
Well, what we wanted to do was to actually retrace the trek that Dad and the two other guys did. It took them a month, and they landed at Hedegima, which is in the middle of West Papua, and then they hiked right up to Lake Archibald, and we wanted to retrace those steps. But, we did a lot of planning, a lot of training for trekking and all sorts of things, but we got delayed with bad weather in the plains and ran out of time, so we didn't actually get to Lake Archibald. But we spent more time in the villages.
Right. And you must have had a few challenges, I guess, compared to everyday life, like the terrain and the technology, and I guess communication would have been almost nil?
Yeah. Well, you know, these days with technology, I mean, Chris, my brother, had a satellite phone, GPS. We had really good maps. We even had a helicopter phone emergency if we got broken legs or whatever. So there was good communication, but it's still some of the most difficult terrain in the world to fly in Papua, because the clouds, the high mountains, and the weather is very unpredictable. So it was still pretty pretty tough in the sense of preparing to go there. It wasn't really a walk in the park, but it was stunning country, absolutely beautiful country to see.
Mm. I want to get to the very first night that you arrived in one of the villages, which is particularly moving. But just in general, broad brushstroke terms, how did your experience of doing that trek compare to what you would imagine your parents did as they were making the trek originally 50 years ago?
Yeah, well, like chalk and cheese. I mean, there's been several books written about not just that trek, but also the aftermath and what happened in those early days. I mean, these guys, they took a month to trek under extreme difficult circumstances. They were being threatened all along the way to be killed. Mm. Dad, remember telling me sometimes he'd turn around, there was a guy with an axe about to cleave his head in two. There were people that were just, they were just wild. And so, but when we were there, man, I mean, it was just, we were just warmly embraced.
Yes.
And, It was just like chalk and cheese, the difference.
Well, let's talk about that then, your very first night. There was a filmmaker with you, Chris Rowe, and I have some audio from that film of your actual experience. So here are some of the audio, some of the moments, I guess, that were captured on film. This one, as you trek to the very first village, a whole number of locals join in and follow you along. And then you approach the village, and your arrival is announced by what must be a villager at the other end. There he is. And then you get the traditional Dani greeting, which I think is just beautiful. And they were particularly thrilled to see Trevor, who lived with them, like you, as a missionary kid. Oh, isn't that gorgeous? And then I guess the most emotive part is, I guess, when they all realised what this moment meant to them. Listen to this. It's very, very emotive. Jim, just explain, why are they so tearful? Why does this mean so much that you have returned to see them?
Well, I guess they, and this is what the word was before we went there, the word had passed around that the children of their spiritual fathers were returning after 50 years. So it was a very, very special time for them and for us. I mean, Trevor and Brian Bond, the son of Russell Bond, they were older, probably 10 or 11 when they left. So the village chief of Warlaw, that what you just played then, he was their houseboy. So they were playmates almost when they grew up. Mm. And so they were reminiscing so much throughout the night. And they just couldn't separate them. Just the warm embraces they were giving and the tears flowing and... it was just a very awesome emotional experience for everyone that witnessed it.
I bet you. Now, your parents went into an area where no missionaries or Westerners had ever been before. What impact did that have on the local people? Give us a before and an after, I guess, picture of what the Christian message actually did for this particular village.
Well, actually, you used a good word there, pictures, and we took lots of pictures of what Dad was a prolific photographer, and he took heaps of pictures, and we photocopied them and took them back with us. But they were all before their mass conversion days, so they were all stark naked with the pig tusks pointed up, which is a sign of ferocity or at war, through their noses that they had them. And one of the last pictures we have in Bokondini is Mum and us kids sitting amongst all these wild Darnies with their bows and arrows at the ready to fight in case they got attacked by neighbouring tribes. That they were the last pictures that we have. And now when we walked in to Bokondini, where we grew up, it was just a pristine, beautiful village embraced by warm, lovely people, a church of 300 or 400 people there, totally autonomous and indigenous, sending out their own missionaries to other parts of Indonesia. It's just... an incredible transformation took place.
Yeah, so there were a bunch of fighters, I guess, beforehand. And superstition-wise, did they have any particular, I guess, beliefs that held them captive?
Yeah, they were really held captive by, I guess you would call it the spirit world. They had a fear of different spirits, of trees and rivers and mountains, and this kept them in fear. They... to the point of having to sacrifice their own children if they broke a taboo or something like that. And it was if you read books like Amazing Darnies by David Scoville and other books that are written about their transformation that took place, it was really the Darnie people themselves that were pushing for the change. And, you know, the best people to ask are themselves, and that's what Chris Rowe did. He actually, some of these old codgers came up and spoke to us and looked at the photos of their fathers and uncles that we had there, and he's captured it all on film of the before and after. So we're hoping that that's going to come out in a little documentary and
absolutely.
We'll, you know, when it happens.
You know, we hear so much, I guess, negative press about Western, quote-unquote, Western missionaries who go into villages and basically change the culture, and yet I guess the big story needs to be expanded to see just what kind of lifestyles these folks actually were able to let go of as a result of being freed by hearing the message of Jesus.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, when they're killing and raping and burning each other's villages and eating, I mean, cannibalism was rife. Two of Dad's co-workers were killed. They were really, that was their lifestyle, and they wanted to change. And when they heard of the power of God, that could change their lives and their lifestyle, and they could become friends with their neighbours and other tribes, they embraced it. And they embraced it in such a way that it just was just like a fire that went through the whole of that region of Papua. And they started spreading the word themselves, and they're still doing it now. There's no missionaries there in that area. They're probably just a handful. It's all totally run by the Papuans now.
Yeah. Well, Jim, just to wrap up, what kind of issues do the West Papuans there actually face, the Dani tribes people and et cetera, that you just recently went back to revisit?
Well, I mean, there is obviously the Free Papuan movement. There is some oppression there. There have been refugees that have come out. We didn't actually get into that and see any of that, but you did get that feeling that that was still there. I think, I guess, changing from a subsistence way of living to a new industrial age, there's that transformation that they need to adjust to. But, you know, they need to really, I think, be encouraged to be proud of who they are and how they live. I mean, we visited places like Jayapura, and then in the little village of Bokanini, and if I had a choice of between those two places to live, I know where I'd choose to live.
Is that right? Yeah, absolutely beautiful. Do you have any plans to go back to West Papua at all, Jim?
Yes, we do want to go back in 2 years' time and complete the trek. We want to get to Lake Archibald, which is where the original trekkers went to and established a beachhead, and from there they went out. You know, quite honestly, Sharon and I could go back and live there tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's just such a beautiful place with beautiful people. So we're definitely going to go back again.
Beautiful story. Thanks so much for joining us to share it, Jim.
Thank you so much for allowing me to.
Yeah, good on you. Jim Dawson there, son of the pioneering missionary Fred Dawson, talking about his recent trek to West Papua, tracing his father's footsteps to see the legacy left after all of those years.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.